The Augmented Advisor series is brought to you by Blueleaf. Access to high-quality financial advice is a global challenge and is a significant contributor to the wealth gap. Blueleaf helps financial advisors serve clients of all sizes by decreasing the time and cost to service a client. Providing high-touch service to smaller clients is not only possible, it's profitable. The combination of machine learning, sophisticated automation, and beautiful simple design in client communications and reporting, as well as back office functions like rebalancing, trading, and billing, eliminates most of the incremental costs of a new client or better servicing your existing clients. Visit Blueleaf, BLUELEAF.com to learn more.
Welcome to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast. I'm Brett King.
And I'm Jason Henricks. Every week since 2013, we explore the personalities, startups, innovators, and industry players driving disruption in financial services.
From incumbents to unicorns, and from cutting-edge technology to the people using it to help create a more innovative, inclusive, and healthy financial future. I'm JP Nichols, and this is Breaking Banks.
In this episode, Brian Barnes, founder and CEO of M1 Finance, joins me to talk about personalization and simplicity. Robo-advisors might be machines, but that doesn't mean they can't deliver on investor-centric personalization. Brian, thanks for joining me. And I'm curious, so, you know, at the point that M1 was founded, you know, I don't want to say robo was mainstream, but there certainly had been a rush of entrants, you know, into the space, and it wasn't entirely new as a concept. Yet you clearly found something, you know, that was an unmet need given the amount of growth you've had. I'd love to hear, you know, as a starting point, what was that unmet need that M1 set out to solve?
Yeah, absolutely. So the unmet need is people just will always need. They need it now. They'll need it in the future. Great tools to manage their personal finances. That it's a ubiquitous problem. People make money, they need to manage it, and they need to manage it across their own personal balance sheet, how they spend and receive money and the like. And with the robos, the big thing that they sort of advanced was we're gonna be able to provide automation on the investing front and make it very low cost. And when we looked at the market, we said, you know, automation is great. It has default like beneficial behaviors sort of happening in the background without you having to make frequent choices. When we look to what we thought the account looks like in 5-10 years, we thought that there's going to be a lot more personalization, that people's finances are very unique to them, and it's not going to default into, you know, a basket of 6-10 ETFs, but it's really going, your investments are always going to be backed by whatever you want in exact proportion to what you want. We thought that there was going to be increased automation, so it wouldn't just adhere to the investing side of the equation. It would also adhere to, you know, your borrowings and how you spent and received money. And then we thought costs are going to continue to come down, that if you can deliver the service in a digital fashion, you can strip out a lot of the costs and, you know, make it more efficient. And so for us, it was, we were able to launch a product with more personalization, more automation, you know, encompassing more of someone's holistic finances and at a lower cost. So, you know, it was those three things that really led to us seeing an unmet need in the market, as well as our growth that we've experienced over the past couple of years.
Now, let's pull on the thread of personalization, because, you know, if you look at the broad advisory business, whether the advisor is a human or a machine, it is often thought that personalization is really driven by that human interaction. How are you able to deliver personalization, but, you know, in this scalable tech-driven way?
Yeah, so, I mean, on the personalization front, we look at someone's finances and everyone is quite different. Like, personal finances are very, very personal and personalized to the individual, that how you make money is different. The amount that you make is different. How you spend it and what you value is different. Your time horizon for investments, your risk tolerance, you know, what investments you think are going to be worth more in the future all differ by the individual. And so it feels very odd that it, you know, you can only fit in a certain, you know, 5 buckets. What software allows is you can set it up so every single thing is optimized to your personal wants and needs. And so with the advisor front, it's actually relatively difficult to sit down and have an hour conversation with an advisor, tell them all the things that are unique to them, have them go back and do it. That's just a very expensive proposition. And so the reason that, like, because it's so expensive, advisors will only care if you have $250,000, $500,000, $1 million and up. And so they all have their relatively high minimums. For us, we say we can create a digital platform that we have to create it once, and then it's more or less free to distribute. And so we can spend all our time and energy, our engineering expertise, our product expertise, designing this one platform so that the user is empowered to go in and do all that themselves. And then we're indifferent how much money that is. We do have the, you know, $1 million accounts on M1, but we can also offer to the person with $50,000 or $10,000 and really provide that exact same experience that someone would only get if they had big sums of money working with a human on the other side.
Now, one of the benefits of humans on the other side is they can be a bit of a forcing function, right? That, you know, surveys have shown repeatedly that people, you know, believe they need to manage their finances, you know, very actively, but the proportion that, truth be told, actively do, it's something like 84% of Americans claim that they should be budgeting. And if you look at, you know, the pure statistics of it, those that actually log in at least once a month, it's something, you know, less than 20%. So there's that big disconnect. And I think the same is true when it comes to managing investments. How have you been able to, you know, really keep people honest and move them through, you know, this process of actually staying engaged in the way they should?
Yeah, so I think there's a few things that we do there. You know, just to hit on that point of the advisor, we never take the perspective that an advisor is not beneficial, that, you know, many times they are that forcing function. They can provide sage advice. They can be that sounding board. I think we do raise the question of whether they're worth the fees that they charge quite a bit. Yeah. And whether every single person needs the advisor. And, you know, to bring it to a whole different realm, I do think everyone would benefit by having their own nutritionist, their own personal trainer, their own lawyer on retainer. But it really gets into is the cost justified? Do they provide the value over and above the cost, or can you do it yourself and the like? And we think that there's a huge, you know, portion of the population that you are better served doing it yourself than paying a high fee for an advisor. And if they have best in class digital platforms, you know, they're very much more empowered to do it themselves. On the engagement front, similar to, you know, the other things of, you know, like personal trainer or the like, we don't think that you can outsource it completely. You can't succeed with healthy eating unless you care about it, you're engaged, you're making smart decisions, you're informed. You can't, similar with your finances, you do have to have a baseline understanding of, you know, basic budgeting, basic investing, you know, what your wants and needs are as you build your financial wealth and well-being. And so we do stress, you should be engaged, you should be involved, you do need to learn the basics. This is not something you can succeed by just, you know, outsourcing completely. And then, you know, we stress beneficial behaviors, automation. And I think it's, if you have to keep making the same decision over and over again, to do the beneficial behavior, it's really easy to put off. And so for what we try to set up is, let's try to tell the platform once, here's how I want my money managed. And then software can take over. It can do the administrative work. All the things can be happening in the background so that your finances are on track according to your customized plan. And you don't have to make that, you know, the manual decisions over and over and over again. And then truthfully, there's an aspect of just fun in it. You know, even if people are 90% passive investors in their favorite four ETFs, the enjoyment and buy-in that you get when you select, you know, the security and you read Wall Street Journal and you go to Seeking Alpha and you participate in the online forums and share your investment ideas, it just tees you up for success of what leads to beneficial investments and what doesn't. And you become a more active participant in your financial well-being.
So on the theme of automation, when you think about, you know, this march towards digitization, what are the most important functions that need to be automated first?
So, you know, it really depends on where people are in their personal financial life, that, you know, you have some people who are, you know, right out of high school or college with their first job, maybe in debt or, you know, very little savings up to, you know, the the mega billionaires, and you know they need wealth planning and tax management and the like, and so it you know, differs. Most people start their careers young with making less money, not a ton of savings, and there it is, automated budgeting, like almost by default, saving a portion or investing a portion, you know, carving out 10-15% of your annual income and just putting it in investments and having your money work for you over time, that you're both saving for later and having that money accrue and compound and the like. And then the paying off debt, that if you're carrying credit card debt at 18-24%, but just by paying that off, you're guaranteeing an 18-24% return, which hedge funds would salivate over. I think it's really starting from the foundation levels of making more than you spend or spending less than you make, investing the rest, and paying off high cost debt are sort of the foundational aspects. As you move up, things get more complicated and more nuanced to the individual, but I would say those are the foundations.
So when you look to the future, what's that next layer after we've automated this back end piece of this, and you look to where the puck is going? What is the future of investing?
Yeah, so at M1, we oftentimes start with you were bringing up the advisor aspect, and we start with a sort of thought experiment of, let's say someone had $50 million and they're working with a Goldman high net worth advisor. They would probably have a team of six in the background optimizing every aspect of their life. And so anytime a dollar came in, they would sort of say, where could this best be used? How do we optimize your asset allocation? How do we optimize your borrowing? How do we draw out, bring down your cost of borrowing and cost of credit? How do we finance different things, whether it's a home purchase, whether it's a kid's education? How do we optimize your taxes and whatnot? And so they would get a massive amount of services in the background, and six people working on it justifies it, because you're working with ton of people, and they would also bring to you, here's analysis, here, what do you want, what are your objectives, and it would be an open dialogue of, here's what I'm trying to achieve and why. We think we sort of start with that of, at some point that is going to be all accessible in a digital palm of your hand application, where it's almost financial advisor or financial assistant in your pocket that can both analyze all of your financial things and analyze the financial situation of all the members on the user base, so that they can provide the, here's what peers in your age demo, your income, your wealth demographic are doing with their finances. If you want to achieve this by these dates, here's what you need to do. If you want to cut back on, if you want to save more, let's do an analysis of where you're spending money. Here's where you cut back, informed analytics. And so I do think it's the finance super app is sort of the end vision, where it's a financial AI, so to speak, in your pocket. And it's analyzing all of your finances and making recommendations and analysis so that you can, make informed decisions on what to do. And it's using your data as well as the data of broad swaths of the population.
Well, I mean, you're veering into, without saying it, this realm of, AI powering, the back end of this. Do you think that is overstated, the impact that AI is going to have in wealth management in this part of the business?
Probably, I think is the short answer. I do think it's in whatever time frame you want to give it, 10 years. A individual sitting down and analyzing someone's finances is going to be overpowered by a computer doing it.
Yeah.
Whether you call that AI and it's sentient or anything like that, or if it's just, doing more analysis via digitization that a human could ever do, I don't know. We won't get into the semantics of that. I just think that, at some point, computers are going to be better at analyzing someone's financial situation and making recommendations for someone's situation. And it's layering in the ability to make that analysis as well as actually act upon it. So can you move the money? Can you do it? You don't want sort of that just mint overlay of, unactionable advice. You want that layer of actionable advice with the ability to act on it, automate it, move the money accordingly.
Got it. I mean, it's interesting when you think of that spectrum, where we don't have to go all the way into the AI part of the world. before the value of, you know, step one is automation, step two is actually just better analysis that can't even be hard-coded before you get to the full AI stack.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a progression. It's, you know, there's a spectrum from everything manual and super costly and time intensive to AI driving everything, and it's going to be a progression along the way. And in some sense, the robo-advisor was sort of the simple if this, then that sort of automation type thing. And I do think as time progresses, it will encapsulate more of someone's financial life, do more robust analysis on it, be able to automate more and more complex things. And it's even, you know, whether that's, you know, automating the individual's financial life or doing more advanced analytics on the back end so that, you know, a finance firm can more intelligently underwrite the person from a credit perspective and offer lower cost credit, more access and the like. And so, you know, bringing costs down that way. So it is going to be a progression. I do think personal finance is going to be getting better and better as time goes on. And I think the real question is that innovation going to be driven by the new fintech companies like an M1, or is it going to be the big financial incumbents of the big banks, the big brokerages and the like? I'm biased. I think it's going to be the you know, tech companies, but you know, I think there's almost more of a clear path towards where we're going, less of a clear path in exactly how we get there.
Well, so you talked about engagement being driven partially by choice and about the emergence within tech. What's your stance on cryptocurrency? Should retail investors be really, you know, considering crypto as part of their investment strategy?
I don't know if I have a hyper-informed position on crypto. You know, I've seen the headlines and stuff like that, and, you know, I have my take. Where I come down is if you understand crypto and you have an informed opinion on it, you should do whatever you want with your money. You know, there's a little bit of, you know, if you have a stance of how the world's going to develop and you have conviction behind that, that's exactly what you should be doing and having your prerogative. You shouldn't be sort of dissuaded from that. What I dislike is the people, you know, I'm buying it because it's going up, and it's a relatively rudimentary, and I think it tees people up for, like, if it succeeds, they don't know why. If it fails, they don't know why. And I don't think you should stake your financial well-being on a coin flip. You know, I do think you should have a perspective and rationale leading to it. In terms of what crypto is going to do, I am relatively agnostic on prognosticating on that.
Yeah. I mean, that is the part that, you know, does become interesting because it does lack a fundamental attached to it. You know, but almost in the same way that a lot of, you know, commodities such as gold and, you know, silver, where, you know, you can say you can do a lot of analysis, but, you know, it's not like gauging performance, you know, and cash flows and things like that.
For sure. Yeah. In like, I love the old value style investors of Graham Dodd or Warren Buffett, where it's, you know, short term, it's a voting machine, long term, it's a weighing machine, where, you know, like short, everything is going to be driven by supply and demand at the point in time. And in some sense, what you're doing is you're projecting supply and demand later on. I think it's easier to project supply and demand later on when it's based in fundamentals and, you know, it has true intrinsic worth and there's a justification for why it should be worth more, rather than someone's, you know, like someone's going to be willing to pay more for it because that's how things have happened in the past. You know, I struggle with that rationale, and it's a, the world's big enough for, you know, invest in things you understand. So like, again, with the Warren Buffett, there's like circle of competence and stay within it. People can be successful staying in crypto their entire life, and people can be successful never reading a thing about it in their entire life. And, you know, there's enough options out there. So I don't think it's a prescriptive one size fits all type thing.
Fantastic. Well, Brian, congratulations on all the success that M1 has enjoyed. If someone is interested in learning, you know, more both about the company and the strategy, where do they find you?
Yeah, so the best thing to do would be sign up for the product. So we have a web app and native apps on iOS and Android. So you can find those in the native app stores. You can go to our website and find careers. We have and our blog posts on our perspective on how we're building our, you know, firm, the how we view the future and the like, and we are hiring like crazy. So, you know, we've been successful and raised $80 million in 2020. We're going to be more than doubling our team over the next 12 months and looking for talented people to help us shape the future of M1.
All right. Thanks for talking about the impact of technology on wealth management.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's it for this week.
If you like the show, make sure to give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform, or share it with a friend, or share it on social media.
We'll see you again next week with more Breaking Banks.